Alright, Tavosai, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Zion. So we're going to pick up actually with a couple of very interesting sugyas. So the Gemara says literally first line, Yeshad litztaka in yad litztaka. So let's remember again, we're talking about the discussion about yados. So yados, remember, are partial declarations that ultimately have the ability to really blossom into a full-fledged neder. Now remember, so we've been discussing extensively in terms of how explicit does a particular declaration have to be in order to go ahead and actually become a full-fledged neder. So the Gemara says, Yesh yad litztaka, oein yad litztaka, does a partial declaration work to commit a requirement or an obligation to give tzedakah or not? Actually, don't do the round just yet. So the Gemara says, "Hey Chidami, what's the case?" So the Gemara says, "If a person says, 'I'm going to give this zuz for tzedakah,' and this one is also," so the Gemara says, "Ahut tzedakah atzmahi." So let's say there's no shaila in that case, right? If you say, "I'm going to give this dollar for tzedakah, and I'm also going to give this one," then obvious, or I'm also and this one also, so that's obvious that the second one is also considered to be pledged to tzedakah. Rather, what's the case? The case is where I said, I'm going to give this dollar to tzedakah and this one, vahadein. But what do I leave out? I leave out the word also, nami. So the question is, I just said, and this one, velo amar nami. I didn't say also. So the Gemara says, my hadain. My hadain nami tztaka kamar. So what am I saying? Do I say, on one hand I could say, my hadain nami tztaka kamar. On one hand I could say, and this one also means that I'm giving this one to tztaka. Odilma, the other possibility is, my hadain nami lafkusa ba'alma kamar v'dipuruhu delo aske. The other possibility is, bless you, when I say Vahadein, what I'm just saying is this one should be usable for general disbursements or general expenditures, and it's just that I did not finish my statement. So we'll say, see, here the Shaila, so everyone's going to agree, if I say this dollar is for tzedakah, and this one is also, so obviously, even though I didn't say, and this one is also for tzedakah, that statement obviously works, and the second one is pledged for tzedakah as well. The question is, if I say this dollar is for tzedakah, and this one, so the Shaila is, what does "and this one" mean? Does "and this one" mean "and this one is also for tzedakah," or "and this one is set aside for general purposes"? Well, we're trying to figure out what his machshava was. Correct. We're trying to inject his intent into his speech and trying to figure out exactly what it is that he meant. So the Gemara says, "Mi arminon." So do we say kevan de iskish le karbanos? So do we say, on one hand, since tzedakah is compared to karbanos? Now, where do we see a comparison between tzedakah and karbanos? Tchsev beficha. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Devar, and the pasuk says, "Motza svasecha tishmar." You should go ahead and keep whatever utterance you make with your mouth. Va'asisa ka'asher nadarti la'Hashem Elokecha. You will do that which you pledge to Hashem your God. Nedava asher dibarta beficha. Literally, a gift that you have spoken with your mouth. So the Gemara understands that beficha refers to tzedakah. So do we say ma karbanos yesh lan yad? So we'll say, just like in yesterday's daf, we established that by karbanos yad, partial declarations work to make an effective obligation af tzedakah yesh li yad. So to again, karbanos, so therefore tzedakah is compared to karbanos. And therefore tzedakah, partial declarations also work to create binding obligation. O dilma l'bal ta'achiru de'iskish. Or on the other hand, no, maybe just the hekish, maybe just the comparison between karbanos and tzedakah is limited in scope. And what does it come to include? All it comes to include is bal ta'acher. That the most, in the same way that you can't delay the bringing of a karbon, so to what? So to you can't delay the giving of tzedakah either. Now, what that means doesn't mean you can't delay the giving of tzedakah. The idea is that if you go ahead and you pledge something to tzedakah, you should pay off your pledge as quickly as possible. And if you don't, that's a violation of bal ta'acher, the Gemara is suggesting. So now what we know is, here's what we know. We know that by karbanos, yados work. We know that we have a hekesh, we have a comparison between tzedakah and karban. The question now is, what is the scope of that comparison? Does that comparison tell me that just like by karbanos, there's an isra bal ta'acher, not delaying? So, excuse me, just like by karbanos, yados work, so too by tzedakah, yados work? Or do we say that the comparison is just limited to say that just like by karbanos, there's no bal ta'acher, so too by tzedakah, there's no bal ta'acher as well? So, the Gemara leaves this hanging. The Gemara doesn't answer this. Now we're going to, you're going to see, we're going to have a bunch of cases like this, and we're actually going to find resolution to this in the Ran. Yesh ad lehefker. So the Gemara says, O dilma en yad lehefker. Next, do partial declarations work in order to make something hefker? So the Gemara says, well, one second, hainu tztaka. Now, Rosi, here's something very interesting, actually. The Gemara says, well, isn't the hefker question essentially the same question as tzedakah? In other words, that if yados work for tzedakah, then yados should work for hefker. Now, Rosi, what's the comparison between hefker and tzedakah? So eventually, you wouldn't normally think to associate these two concepts, but in fact, they are very much associated. Why? Why? Because essentially, you're relinquishing ownership. Now, the difference just is that in tzedakah, it's a more targeted relinquishment. Yeah, Greg, you're a pharmacist. I don't go to you for. I go for your medicine. I have to look. I have to look to the attorneys. I have to look to the attorneys for the English. But I'm going to go with you because you're the only one who answered. Fine. So interestingly enough. So when you give tzedakah, so again, you're relinquishing your rights in a targeted direction. Yet on the other hand, by hefker, it's just a general relinquishment of rights. But yet, interestingly enough, the Gemara says they're connected. So do we say hainu tzedakah? Again, it's the same shaila. Does yados work for hefker? The same shaila as does yados work for tzedakah? So imtim salomar ka'amar. So the Gemara says you're right. This is imtim salomar. What does that mean? Imtim salomar yeshal tzedakah dein hekesh lamechza. Hefker miar minan hainu tzedakah. So we'll say, if you say, what the Gemara says is imtim salomar means if you want to say. So if you want to say that there is a yad for tzedakah, we'll say that was the previous discussion. Meaning if you want to say that partial declarations work for tzedakah, now how would you arrive at the conclusion that a partial declarations work for tzedakah? That would be if you say that's what? That the hekish, the comparison to karbanos, is a full-fledged hekish. Not only does the hekish teach me that tzedakah vows are subject to bal ta'acher, but it also tells me just like there are yados by karbanos, there's also yados by tzedakah. So miyar mina hainu tzedakah, and therefore do we say that hefker is like tzedakah? Oh, dilma, shiny tzedakah. Maybe we'll say, no, tzedakah is different. Why? The tzedakah lo chazi el laniyim. Because we'll say, here is the difference, that tzedakah is only usable or suitable for the poor. About hefker, bless you. About hefker, bein lani and bein liashirim. But ultimately, again, what hefker is open is technically acquirable both by the rich and the poor. I will say, remember, it's very important you sowed. So, for example, you know, if let's say somebody who's not poor comes along and takes peah from my field, so what's talacha? What's talacha? Right? Somebody who's rich or somebody who's not poor takes peah from my field. What's talacha? Right? So we'll say, remember, again, technically speaking, that's gezel. That's theft. Why? Because peah is tzedakah. And although technically speaking it's hefker for aniyim. So it's not, that's the difference between tzedakah and hefker. You see, we'll say, something that's hefker is hefker for everyone. Something that is tzedakah, ultimately, again, is hefker. But it's hefker to a degree, but it's limited hefker. It's hefker only to those who are poor. So the Gemara is asking, so therefore, how do I say that on one hand, hefker is like tzedakah? Because again, both cases I'm relinquishing ownership. Or do we say that no, that hefker is different to tzedakah because tzedakah, again, hefker is hefker for everyone. Tzedakah is only hefker for aniyim. So therefore, again, the Gemara doesn't solve the question. Weiter. Yesh yad lebeis akise o lo. So we'll say, so this is a very interesting case. Look at Rashi for just a moment over here. Rashi says, Yesh yad lebeis akise, hecha de lo amar beferish de lehave beis akise, me have hazmana va'asra lespalwa. So we'll say, listen to this. The Gemara is going to operate with an assumption over here, which we're going to challenge in just a moment of the following. We know the halacha is, you can't daven kriyashma. You can't say shma or shmona esrei in a beis akise, right? In a bathroom. So here's the interesting shayla. Let's say I go ahead and I designate a space to be a beis akise, right? I have a structure, but it doesn't even have to be a structure. It could be just an area. But let's keep it easy for just a moment. I have a structure and this, you know, big sign in the front. You know, here is the future site of the beis akise, right? You know, financing secured by, you know, whatever. Right, here's the future site to the beis akise. So we'll say that's called hazmana. I have gone ahead and I have dedicated or I've set aside, I've prepared this beis akise, but what? It has not been, I don't know what's the right word. christened, you know, right? 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 It has not been inaugurated. So therefore, again, right? Just as this is the future side is there. So we'll say, this is actually a very meaningful Shaila. Again, it's much less meaningful for us here, but it's much more meaningful in times of the Gemara or Rabosai. Remember, a Beis HaKisei often was just a hole in the ground. So let's say you said, I'm going to make this a Beis HaKisei, then you happen to be davening in the area, but you haven't used it yet. So can you go ahead and recite Shema? So Rabosai, see, the Gemara is not actually asking that kasha. See, the Gemara is presupposing, we're going to challenge it just, the Gemara is presupposing that Hazmana Milsa, that going ahead and dedicating an area for a Beis HaKisei is actually meaningful and actually gives it the status of a Beis HaKisei, that even before it's been inaugurated through use, Lamaisi, you still can't say Kriya Shema there. So the Gemara is not, the Gemara is asking, Yesh Yad LaBeis HaKisei. So we'll say, let's say again, a person doesn't make a full declaration, but instead what? A person makes a partial declaration designating a particular area to be used as the Beis HaKisei. So is that partial declaration effective? And the way the effectiveness will be gauged will be how does it prevent me from reciting Shema in this particular area? So the Gemara says, "Hey, what's the case? So if I say this structure should be a Beis HaKisei, v'hadein nami, and this structure next to it also, so then that's obvious. Hahu Beis HaKisei nami hava. So we'll say, obviously, that's not even a yad. That's a more explicit lashon, where I'm saying explicitly that what? That the second structure should be just like the first. Rather, what's the case? Just like we said before, but rather, what's happening? I say structure A should be a Beis HaKisei, and structure B. So the shayla is, but what didn't I say? I didn't say nami. I didn't say also. So the Gemara says, my hadain da amar. So what is this hadain, this one that I'm saying? Bahadain nami Beis HaKisei? Am I saying that this structure should also be a Beis HaKisei? O dilma, my bahadain, litashmisha ba'al makam. Or perhaps, what am I saying? I'm just saying structure A is a Beis HaKisei, and structure B also. But structure or and structure B. But what I mean to say when I say and structure B is what? Structure B will be used for other things, not Beis HaKisei. Michlal, so the Gemara says, let's pause for just a moment. The question presupposes, Michlal de pshita ila rabina, diyesh zimul Beis HaKisei. Now, what's interesting about this is the question presupposes that Ravina holds that, in fact, designating an area to be a Beis HaKisei, what actually endows it with Beis HaKisei identity, even before it's actually being used as a Beis HaKisei. We'll say, you should know, again, this Shaila has many different ramifications of Hazmana Milsa or Hazmana Lav Milsa. You know, again, where this comes up, you know, the Mishnah Berurah deals, we'll see the Mishnah Berurah just a little bit, the Mishnah Berurah deals because this person has a tefillin bag, but I didn't use it for my tefillin yet. And I decide, you know what? I want to use it as a lunch bag. It's got a couple of nice layers, right? It's got a little insulation. So I'd love to use it as a lunch bag. And even the best part is, it's monogrammed, right? I mean, it's a personalized lunch bag. So can I go ahead? Now, again, obviously, I purchased it for the purpose or I made it for the purpose of my tefillin, but I've never put tefillin in there. So this whole shayla of Hazmana Milsa, Hazmana Lav Milsa is a very dramatic shayla. There's many ramifications. So here again, the Gemara says, you are assuming, the question presupposes that Lamaisa, all right, Barfush, you're talking about the thermos ones? Good, that's even a better one, right? You see, like the thermos tefillin cases now. I decide, you know what, Mamish, I'm getting up early to come to Daf Yomi in the morning. This would be gewaldig for my coffee, right? So I want to go ahead. I'll get a bag for the tefillin, use the thermos of the coffee, and it even has a shoulder strap, right? That's the best part of it. So again, I will say, it's a real shayla. So the Gemara is saying over here, that according to Shaila presupposes that Hazmona works. So the Gemara says, but yet Vahami Bali Ravina. But Ravina had this kasha. His main Labisa Kesei Mahu. What happens if you go ahead and you dedicate a particular, you set aside a place to serve as a Beis HaKisei, but you have not yet used it, or his Mino Labis Hamerchatz Mahu, or you've gone ahead and what? You have dedicated, or you have set aside a place to go ahead and serve as a bathhouse. So I will say, so what's the halacha? Zimun moil. Oh, in zimun moil, does setting aside a particular area to be designating a particular area for a particular use endow it with the identity of the intended use, or not. So both sides. So what the Gemara is asking is, why are you asking about Yados over here? It's not even, you're asking the Shaila as if it's clear that Zimun, that designating an area for a particular purpose, works. But the truth is, that's a Shaila, to which the Gemara says, Rava Chada Migo, Chada Migo. Gemara says, excuse me, Ravina Chada Migo Chada Kamiboyle. Rava's really asking a question within a question. What's the question? So first question is, Zimun Moil, or Ein Zimun Moil. So we'll say his first Shaila is, does designating an area to be used in a particular way endow it with that future identity now, even before it's used, or not? And Im Tim Salomar Yesh Zimun, and if you want to say that Hazmana Milsahi, that in fact when you designate an area to be used in a particular way for the future, it already has that identity. So then do we say, Imtim Tilamar Yesh Zimun, so do we say Yesh Yad or Ein Yad? Do we say again, so we'll say assuming that Zimun is Milsahi, remember we'll say Zimun means setting something or designating something for a particular purpose. So do we say that designating it for a particular purpose endows it with a particular identity already? So then again, then we can ask the kasha, does a yad, does a partial declaration work to affect Zimun or not? To which the Gemara answers, Tiboyle. Ultimately, again, the Gemara says, Tiboyle Rabosa, you should know, is the Nedarim equivalent of Tegu. Just interesting, the Nedarim has a couple of different interesting word choices. So Tiboyle is the Nedarim equivalent of Teku. So Rabosei, I'll just tell you, interestingly enough, this case happens to be brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. This is in Simen Pei Gimel. Simen Pei Gimel. The title of the Simen is Dinei Beis HaKiseh B'Kriyas Shema. Right? The laws of Kriyas Shema as they apply to the bathroom. So you would think, well, it's pretty much simple Simen. Don't say it. Right? But interestingly enough, you'll see this is why these Shailas come up. So listen to this. Amar. Bayis ze yehei lebeis hakiseh. I'm speaking to the Shulchan Aruch. A person says, this home should be a beis hakiseh. Va'amar abayis acher v'gam ze. And a person said about another structure. So it's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch over here is weaving in the halachos of yados, which is quite interesting. So a person says, this structure, it should be a beis hakiseh. And also this one. So also this one means the structure B is also going to be a beis hakiseh. V'amar ala sheni ubayis ze. V'lo amar v'gam ze. Hari Hasheni Safek im his mina lekach im lo lefichach in korbo lechatchila v'im korbo yatsa. So we'll say, listen to this. So the Shulchan Aruch says this is mamishar case. But if a person goes in and says structure A should be abeis hakiseh and structure B, but what's missing from that statement? Also nami. So then I don't. So the Shulchan Aruch says we're not sure. Again, tiboyle to teiku. We don't know what the status is of structure B, and therefore what says the Shulchan Aruch? Don't say kriyas shema lechatchila in structure B. But if you set it in structure B, nevertheless, what? You're Yotze. Now, both say, now, what do you see from here? So if you set it in structure B, you're Yotze. But if you set it in structure A, you're not Yotze. So what does that tell you? Hazmona milsehi. Sahaloch lamaisa both say, if you dedicate a structure to be a beis hakiseh, even though it has not yet been used as a beis hakiseh, hazmona milsehi, designation is meaningful and significant, and therefore you can't see Kishas. We'll say, so for example, Mirat Hashem, Halavai, we're going to build a building. Right? So let's say there's going to be a point in time where there's going to be an area that is going to be a bathroom, but is not going to be yet used as a bathroom. Saloch lemaisi, you can't say, well, you know, sometimes you do this construction in phases. The sanctuary is not ready yet, but you know what? The future site of the Kehillah's, washroom is going to be ready. And you know, it's a big open space because nothing's up yet. Let's just dive in there. So the halach is you cannot. Once you know that a particular area is going to be used as a bathroom, then Lamaisi again has that designation and therefore no tefillah in that place. Yes?
One of these two places.
Oh, so that's good. So there it would seem to be clear that it's not going to have, that's not called hazmana. The definition of hazmana is some level of specificity, where you're saying, so in a case where there's no specificity, like one of these two, that does not designate either. There, you'd be able to say kriyas shema actually in both of those places.
You have to say nami for the second place?
Yes. In order to make the second place a beis hakiseh, you have to say nami.
If you don't,
then it's ambiguous. So ambiguity tells us, l'chatchila, don't say kriyas shema in structure B.
Okay.
But if you did, you're yotze.
Okay.
If you did, you're yotze. Yes.
Is this halacha still applicable with modern day plumbing?
Yeah, we'll choose, even though Yankee's saying good. Remember, when Chazal talk about a beis hakiseh, so the truth is, if you want to go ahead and get like a, If you want to get a feel of like what Chazal we're dealing with, so go into like one of those Porto, Porto bathrooms, you know. Because why? Because remember, Chazal in Simchat Beis Hakisei is the waste is there. The waste is there. So Yankee's saying good that there are certain posts that deal with the reality of modern day plumbing where the waste is. But nevertheless, the truth is, halacha lemaisa, pretty much, we still apply the same halachas. Our bathrooms have the same deal as Beis Hakisei, says the Gemara. Amar Abaye, so let's go back to a little bit. So first, I'm sorry, before we go back to look at the Ran for just one moment. So you see the Ran on the left-hand side, all the way towards the top. There's a section that says, Ula Inyan Halacha. You see that? It's in the one that says, Chad Amigo. Ula Inyan Halacha. So we'll say, so now the Ran does something really great over here. He goes through all these cases that we did. So Ula Inyan Halacha. B'kiddushin akhtin l'chumra d'yesh yad. So we'll say, when it comes to Kiddushin, we say l'chumra, that partial declaration affects Kiddushin. Because since the question was not really answered, so the chumra, therefore I will say again, it's doubt in biblical law, and therefore we'll resolve it stringently. So I will say, what about pay and staka? So what about, again, yados or pay and staka? So again, partial declarations for payah, partial declarations for staka, will also be resolved l'chumra, because the Gemara left off with a teku. V'chein kasav haramban zal b'hochosav debayun d'tztaka lo ifshita ba'day b'sugyan d'yeshay l'tztaka v'kaim alanami d'chol teku d'yisro l'chumra. So let's say again, as we know, any case where you have a teku, any case where the Gemara leaves it resolved, when, especially when you're dealing with matters of biblical law, we always will resolve it stringently. So I will say, all of these cases that we just said before, does a yad work, does a yad not work, where the Gemara did not explicitly render, the Gemara did not explicitly give a ruling, halach lemai said we will rule stringently, and stringently means that the partial declaration will in fact work to create nether realities. It says the Gemara bayit, menud ani lecha. So I will say again, so what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah spoke about a case of where a person says, menuda ani lecha. And I will say, now menuda ani lecha is a strange lashon. Menuda literally means what? Literally sounds like it literally means excommunicated. So a person says, I say to Reuven, I am excommunicated from you. So what does that mean? So the Mishnah ruled, Rabbi Akiva hayachochech bazal hachmir. Rabbi Akiva was unsure about this, and therefore he was machmir. So says the Gemara, Amar Abai, and when we say machmir, what does machmir mean? That we treat it as a neder not to get benefit from the other. So Amar Abai, Modi Rabbi Akiva l'inyin malkesh in aloke. Rabbi Akiva agrees that if you made this type of neder, menuda ani lecha, that if you violated this neder, you would not get malkus. So we'll say, even though Rabbi Akiva is being machmir to say that lamaisa, we treat it like a binding vow, he is not going to treat it as a fully binding vow, that if you violate it, you're not going to get malkus. The imkein nisni Rabbi Akiva machmir. Because if that was the case, it should have just said that Rabbi Akiva was simply machmir. You don't have to say this lashon of chokech bazeh lahachmir. Amra papa, benedina minach to kol yamalo pligida aser. Nebosei, Rabbi Papa says, if I use a lashon of nedina minach, right? I am nedina minach. Now, nedina literally means like detached. So if a person says, if I say to Reuven, I am detached from you, everybody agrees that that is a proper lashon of neder. If you look at Rashi, benedina minach, demashma beferish aha menuda lecha dahinu vadel kuli ama aser. So I'll say, since apparently this lashon of nedina, remember again, I'll say, as we will see, in nedarim also, there's an incredible element of halcha achar lashon b'nei adam, that we go after the way people speak. So some of these lashonos may sound alien to us, but at least in the Gemara's time, these were bona fide lashonos. So a person says nedina lecha, that's a proper lashon of making an eder to abstain from getting benefit from the other. However, again, misham tana minach, if a person says misham tana minach, remember shamta is also another form of excommunication. Lucholi amashari, everyone agrees that that is not, that type of lashon does not create a binding nether. I subamai pligi. So where do they argue? Amadeis b'menuda nilacha. They argue in the lashon of menuda. The Rabbi Akiva sabra lishna diniduyahu. Rabbi Akiva holds menuda is like a lashon of niduya, and niduya, remember again, is what is one of those lashonos where everybody says will be aser. But Rabbanan Sabri Nishna Dimisham Tanahu. And the Rabbanan hold, no, that's a lashon of Shamta, which ultimately, again, does not create the Isser. Upligi de Rav Chista, this argues on Rav Chista, that Hu Gavra Dar Misham Tana Bin Chase Dibre de Rav Yermia Bar Abba. We'll say there was a man who said that Misham Tana, I hereby am Shamta, on the property of the son of Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba. And what happened? Also, the guy came before Rav Chista. Amar lei les tachash le Rabbi Kiva. And Rav Chista said, don't worry about it. Your words are totally ineffective because knowing is choshesh for Rabbi Akiva. Kasabar b'meshamtana pligi. And it seems to indicate that they even argue on the lashon of Shamta. Amar Rabbi Ila. Amar Rav. The double from Abosai. So now, once we're bringing up these, now remember, these are all cases of Nidarim, right? But where a person is using a lashon of excommunication to go ahead and create an isser to someone else. So I'm saying I'm excommunicating myself from you, which means I'm taking a neder not to derive any benefit from you. So the Gemara says like this. So once we're talking about excommunication, the Gemara actually goes into some of the halachos concerning excommunication. Amar Rabbi Ilo Amarav. Nido b'fano, Rabbi say, if you excommunicate someone in their presence, so then what? In matira no ele b'fano. Rabbi say, in order to go ahead and annul or to reverse the excommunication, so you have to do that in the presence of the excommunicated individual. Rabbi say, if you look at Rashi for just a moment, so Rashi says, nido b'fano, chacham shenida es ha'ad b'fano, en yochol lahatir lo ele b'fano. So let's say again. So if a chacham excommunicates someone, if I excommunicate Reuven excommunicates me, Reuven's the chacham, he excommunicates me. Then in order for him to reverse the excommunication, I have to be there for the reversal process. So let's say if you take a look at, however, nidosh shelo b'fanav, if Reuven excommunicates me not in my presence, then what? Matirin lo bein b'fanav bein shelo b'fanav. Then ultimately we can go ahead and reverse that neder. Both, he can reverse that excommunication in my presence or outside of my presence. I will say, take a look at the Ran for just a moment. Tap Ran on the daf. Nido b'fanav ein matir lo. So I will say, remember again, the Gemara is giving now a klal for excommunication. So if you excommunicate someone in the presence of the excommunicated party, then what? Then lemaisa, you must reverse that in their presence as well. But if you excommunicated them not in their presence, then you need not reverse that in their presence. Look at top Ran. So if you excommunicate someone in their presence, you must go ahead and reverse that in their presence as well. So we'll say the first thing the Ran says, something very interesting, because when you excommunicate a person in their presence, that's a stronger form of excommunication, and therefore to be reversed, you must have the excommunicated party present. The Ran says, if you look, skip to the second line, middle of the line, he says, Veloni hira, that reason doesn't make sense to me. Ela taima de milsa mishum chashada. Rather, says the Ran, the issue is chashad. What does that mean? De'ima tiran lo shalo befanav, pamim shiatiru, v'amenuda lo yeda, u'kishalo yenagu bo nidui, yavo l'chashada. Rabbi said, listen to this. The concern is like this. If you excommunicate a person in his presence, and then you go ahead and you annul the excommunication, not in his presence. So what happens? He might not know what's going on. And therefore, remember, we'll say when a person is excommunicated, you can't count them as part of the minyan. You're not supposed to do business with him. You're not supposed to speak with him. And suddenly what? He's being counted. He walks into shul, number 10. So they begin the minyan. Or people begin speaking to him. Now he doesn't know that the excommunication has been reversed. So what does he assume? He will assume that, just people take this excommunication thing. They don't take it so seriously. Therefore, in order to preserve the seriousness of the process of excommunication, so what happens? If we excommunicate him in his presence, we also have to reverse that excommunication in his presence as well. However, again, the Ran goes on. However, aval kishinidush lo b'fanav, but Rabbi say, when they excommunicate a person not in his presence, leka chashada, there's no concern why. Sha'af husover shemetu. So we'll say, remember, let's say they excommunicated Reuven not in his presence. And then what happens? Reuven walks into shul a couple of weeks later. And again, same thing. He's the 10th guy who walks in. What does he figure to himself? The same way they excommunicated me not in my presence, so to what? They reverse the excommunication not in my presence as well.
Maybe they could send a messenger.
I'm sorry?
Why imam has to be in front of them? They could send a messenger your excommunication is over. So why has to be imam?
So I guess in order to, I don't know, maybe they can. Maybe the halachos of excommunication says they can send the shaliach. Maybe what it just means is they have to somehow formally inform him. That could be. That could be, I don't know, I'm not familiar with these halachas enough, but that could very well be. But I think what the point the Gemara is making is that if they inform him in his presence, they also must specifically inform him that the excommunication has been reversed, as opposed to if they excommunicate him not in his presence, they don't have to, finally, they don't have to inform him at all. He'll just understand circumstantially that the excommunication has been lifted. So the Gemara goes weiter. Amarav Khanin Amarav Hashameh Haskaras Hashemi Pi Chaveh Rabbah says another interesting halacha. If you hear someone curse Hashem, Chas Hashalom, let's say I hear my friend curse God, Sarach L'Nadoso, I have to excommunicate that person right then and there. Ve'im lo nidu, and if I don't excommunicate that person, Hu atzmo yeh benidui, then I, the listener who heard this, I should be excommunicated. They're both saying, now, if you take a look at the Ran for just a moment, the Ran says, Ve'im lo nidu, Hu atzmo yeh benidui, so if again, if I hear my friend curse Hashem, so the friend should be excommunicated immediately, and if I don't excommunicate him, then I myself should be excommunicated. Says the Ran, Lo shiyehe nidui me'ilim. Now I will say, now it doesn't mean that literally I, the listener, I'm going to be just automatically excommunicated. Ella, ra'oi lehisnados kamar. Rather, again, it would be appropriate for me to be excommunicated. Shariyamaskir atzmo tzarach nidui. Vehechi chomer mimeno hashameh v'shosek el kidamar. So also what the Gemara is saying is like this. Someone goes ahead and curses HaKadosh Baruch Hu, supposed to say that is a very severe thing to do, and such a person should be excommunicated. And what the Gemara is saying essentially is like this: and if someone hears that and does nothing about it, right? If someone hears that and does not act, does not do something, then the truth is such a person like that should be excommunicated, should be punished. So supposed to say again, remember, the understanding it's not literal, but what it's saying is that Lamaisa, again, it's very important. You sowed. Let's say if you see something wrong that's happening and you sit idly by and do absolutely nothing, you are responsible as if you committed the negative act yourself. That's the idea that Chazal is trying to express. Shekomakum shas karas Hashem mitzuya. We'll say again, just to show you the severity of cursing the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because any time where there's a cursing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or even, remember, an uttering of God's name in vain, wherever that happens, so the Gemara says, Sham anius mitzuya v'anius kemisa. So we'll say, so any case like that where there's a mentioning of God's name in vain or a cursing of God's name in vain, there is poverty to be found, and poverty is like death. How do we know that poverty is like death? Shena emar, kimesu kol anashim. I will say again, interestingly enough, so remember the Pasuk says that they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, when Moshe Rabbeinu was in Midyan, God says to Moshe, go back to Mitzrayim, kimesu kol anashim avakshim es nafshecha. All the people that wanted to kill you, and this is a reference to Tendasan and Aviram, the people who wanted to kill you are dead. I will say, now we know they weren't dead. Right? How do we know they weren't dead? Because they resurface again later on. So either it was Tchiyas HaMeisim or they didn't die. So it's not Tchiyas HaMeisim. So if they didn't die, so why are they called dead? The answer is why? Because they became poor. Paro took away all of their money. So because they became poor, the Gemara says from here, you see that Ani Chashev Kemes, a pauper is considered to be like someone who's dead. So the Gemara says, V'tanya, Kol Makom Shenastu Chachamim Einehem, wherever the rabbis were unhappy, literally means wherever the rabbis placed their eyes, which is another way of saying wherever the rabbis were unhappy with what someone was doing, o misa o oni, it resulted either in death or in poverty. So we'll say, we see again this incredible linkage. So the point the Gemara is making over here is what? The idea is that when someone goes ahead and curses HaKadosh Baruch Hu or utters God's name in vain, technically speaking, that's grounds for excommunication. I will say, obviously, we don't necessarily have the power to excommunicate one another, but the idea the Gemara is saying is, and if I hear it, and I don't do anything, I don't respond, I don't somehow try to remedy or rectify the situation, I am considered to be culpable as well. And just so you understand, again, why it's so severe, because at the end of the day, ultimately, wherever Chazal are unhappy with something, there's either Misa or there's Oni. There's either death or there's poverty, and poverty is the equivalent of death. How do we know that? From Dasan and Aviram. And we have to say the truth is, the Gemara mentions this concept many times about Ani Chashev Kemes. So the Gemara goes right to Amar Rabbi Abba, Hava Kamina Kamid Rav Huna. So I was once before Rav Huna, and what happened? Shamalach Isisa, the Afka Haskaras Hashem Levatala. There was a woman who went ahead and took God's name in vain. This is all happening right in front of Rav Huna. And what happened? Shamta. Rav Huna excommunicated her for having taken God's name in vain. But yet, interestingly enough, the Shara La La'altar Ba'apa. But then what did he do? He then reversed the excommunication immediately. So he excommunicated her, and then he reversed the excommunication immediately. And Rabbi Abba said, I learned three things. Shmamina Tlas, I learned three things. Number one, Shmamina Hashomea Haskaras Hashem Mipi Chaveiro Tzarach Lundoso. Number one, I learned that if you go ahead and you hear the name of Hashem from your friend, meaning if you hear someone take God's name in vain or curse the name of God, then what do you have to do? You have to excommunicate them immediately, because I will say again, that's what Rav Huna did. Shmamina, nido b'fanav ematron b'fanav. Number two, what do I learn? That if you excommunicate someone in their presence, in order to reverse that excommunication, has to be what? Has to be in their presence as well, as happened in the case of this woman. And I will say thirdly, which is the chiddush in this case, ushmamina ein bein nidu l'afarav lo klum. I will say third lesson is, there is no minimum duration for excommunication. Interesting, right? Because what happened in this case over here? So Rav Huna excommunicated this woman, and then what? And then he immediately reversed it. And I'm going to say, so what's happening over here? Just circumstantially, we must surmise that this was a case of a woman who made a major mistake, probably unintentionally. Probably unintentionally. Or if she did it intentionally, she did not realize the true severity of her actions. So Rav says, so what did Rav Huna do? Rav Huna had to make a point. And what was the point? I'm excommunicating you. But because he realized that perhaps, again, her intent was not really to do something negative, so what does he do? He reverses it a moment later. So he has to make the point that you can't take God's name in vain in a very dramatic fashion, excommunicated. But because he realized, again, that it wasn't really her intent to sin, he immediately reverses it. So from here we see that what? That you could go ahead and put someone in excommunication, and what? There's no, you know, I would have thought, like, for example, I'll say, going back to this past week's parasha, so you become a nazir. So I'll say, so what's the pshat? You know, I can't say I am a nazir for a long weekend. You know, whatever, you know, holiday weekend's coming up, and I'm going to knock off early on Thursday, I'll finish up a nazir Monday morning. You can't do that. Stam nazir, right? The shortest duration for a nazir is how long? It's 30 days. So again, I might have thought also excommunication also has a basic duration. Kamashalan, no, that you can be excommunicated literally for a moment. So the Gemara says the following. Amrav Gidol Amrav, Talmud Chacham Minadeh Le'atzmo. Now, Boston, this is also very interesting. A Talmud Chacham could go ahead and excommunicate himself. Now, Rabbi say, now what does this mean? Take a look at the Ran, Rabbi say, for just a moment. Tam Tchacham menadeh la'atzmo u'mefer la'atzmo, the Gemara says. Tam Tchacham could go ahead and excommunicate himself and go ahead and reverse that excommunication, says the Ran. Tam Tchacham menadeh la'atzmo u'mefer la'atzmo. Kasev arash bazal, tedavka hecha, delo have bar nidui. Now, this is very important. We're going to see in just a moment. This is talking about situations where the Talmud Chacham himself is not really subject to excommunication. We're going to see what that means. If a Talmud Chacham is really subject to excommunication because of something that he did, then A, he can't excommunicate himself, and B, most certainly what? He can't reverse it for himself. So go back to the Gemara for just a moment. So says the Gemara, what's the example of this? Okay, you know, we'll come back to that Ran in just a moment. So the Gemara says, Peshitta, that's obvious. So, of course, a Talmud Chacham could excommunicate himself and reverse that. To which I will say a very profound statement. Ma'udimo, what I've thought, Ein chavush matir atzmo mibeis ha'asurin. I will say, I might have thought that what? Someone who is incarcerated cannot release themselves from jail. I will say, understand, that is a statement that has incredible metaphorical impact. But that's saying, Chazal often used this statement to teach me the idea that sometimes when we have a difficult situation, we are so embedded in that situation that I do not know how to extricate myself. I will say also, this is the common people use this phrase of, you can't see the trees from the forest. Sometimes a person becomes so, and this is why sometimes a person has to be shul eitz on certain situations, because I've lost all objectivity, I've lost all orientation. I just don't know how to get myself out of it. So that's the notion of in chavush matir atzmo mibeis ha'asurin. Sometimes when you are in the midst, when you are incarcerated, when you are enmeshed in a particular circumstance, you lack the proper objectivity and perspective to know how to navigate out of it. So I might have thought that, again, if a Talmud Chacham puts himself in excommunication, he can't get himself out. Kamash malon, that is not the case. So hey chidami. So we'll say, so first of all, what does this mean that a Talmud Chacham is excommunicating himself and getting himself out of excommunication? What's the case? Ki ha demar zutra chasida. This is like the case of marzutra chasida. Ki mechayiv bar bei Rav Shamta. I will say, listen to this. When Marzutra had to excommunicate a particular Talmud from the yeshiva, what would he do? Mishamis nafshe bereisha. He would go ahead and first excommunicate himself. Vahadar mishamis bar beirav. And only afterwards would he go ahead and excommunicate the Talmud, right? Isn't this interesting? So first he would go ahead and excommunicate himself, right? Because it will say what he wanted to do is he wanted to feel the pain of this particular Talmud Chacham. So the first thing he would do is excommunicate himself, and then only afterwards would he excommunicate the Talmud Chacham. And what happened? The Chi'ayel Lebeis say, when he would then go to his home, Shari Lenafshe, he would release his own vow, V'hadar Shari Le, and then he would go ahead and release the Talmud Chacham as well. So we'll say, if you go back now to the Ran, writes Tam Tchacham Menada Latzmo Meferli Atzmo Kazav Rashba the Dafka Hecha Dolo Havi Barnidu Kihadimar Zutra to me Midas Chasidus. Midas Chasidus Baalmo Mishomikra de Bar Beirav Hava Mishames Nafshe. So we'll say, remember again, this is very interesting. So what was Marzutra doing? Marzutra felt terrible guilt and terrible difficulty about excommunicating a Torah scholar. So what would he do? To feel the pain of the Torah scholar, he would excommunicate himself as well. So first he'd have to excommunicate the Torah scholar. First what he would do is he would go ahead and excommunicate himself first so that he would be in the same parasha. Then he would go ahead and excommunicate the Talmud Chacham. So I'll say, in order that he feel the pain of the Talmud Chacham. That's the case, Talmud Chacham. Ultimately, now, did Marzutra deserve excommunication? Of course not. Of course not. But rather, again, he was putting himself in the same parasha. But then what would he do? Then he would go ahead and release himself from his excommunication, and afterwards he would release the Talmud Chacham. I will say it's an incredible yisod in life, that in general sometimes it's a yisod in parenting also, it's a yisod in tochach of giving rebuke, that sometimes when you have to do something that is going to hurt another, a person has to somehow put themselves in that same state as the person that they're going to have to hurt. Because sometimes you have to hurt people. Just sometimes you have to say things that are going to be hurtful. You have to do things that are going to be hurtful. But Lamaise, a person should somehow be able to feel the pain of the other as well. Put yourself in the matzav of the person that you are about to hurt, and it'll make you more sensitive to their plight. Sensitivity to their plight will allow you to do what needs to get done while inflicting minimal damage upon the other. All right, we'll stop over here. We'll pick it with Amar of Gidl tomorrow, Emir Sashem.